The third parak continues the conversation that we had throughout the prior parak on what is considered one field, and accordingly you only have to give one payah for it, or when do we have separate fields, and accordingly you have to give a separate payah for each one of them. So Mishnah Aleph says as follows, Malbinos hatfua shebein azeis, and we have a situation that we have malbinos, which are literally square patches. It's actually a brick mold is what it is, a malben, but we're using that phrase that we would make bricks out of a mold. We have patches that are in the shape of bricks. They're square, they're rectangular, well, I'll call it strips. So we have strips of grain that are planted between olive trees. So we have olive trees, a number of olive trees, and we have going through them strips of grain. And our example would be we have the strips running north and south through the olive trees. So do we consider those strips of grain one field and you give only one payah, or is each strip a separate field and each one requires a payah? Beis Shammai omrim payah mikol echad ve'echad. Beis Shammai views these patches as separately and you have to give a payah for each one of them. Beis Hillel omrim me'echad ala kol. Beis Hillel aggregates them together and accordingly you just have to give one payah for all of them. Despite that, Umodim, they both agree. In other words, even Beis Shammai will agree in the following scenario, Shimahu Roshe Shruas Muravin, that if at the tops of those fields, at the tops of those strips, they are attached, then it would definitely be only one Beis. So the example that we saw before is we have the strips running north and south. If they are touching, if they are connected by an additional strip on either the east side or the west side, that would aggregate all of those northern, southern, southern strips into one field for sure, because they're all attached either on the eastern or western side. So accordingly, we'll just read the language in the Mishnah. Moding, they both agree, even Beis Shammai would agree, Shimhayu Roshe Shuras Moravin, if the tops of the fields of those strips are touching, Shuhu Nosen Peah Me'echad Al HaKol, that you simply give one payah for all of those attached strips. Mishnah Beis deals with a situation that somebody has a single field that is planted with the same grain, for example, but he picks it at different times because it ripens at different times. And he goes around and he picks those areas that are ripe now, and he's going to come back for a second harvesting for those patches that he leaves over because they weren't ripe. So the Mishnah calls it Haminamer Etzadehu. Haminamer is from the language of Namer, which is a leopard. So it looks spotted like a leopard. These patches that are left over that he has to go back and reharvest. Mishir klachim lachim, and he left those patches because they weren't ripe. Rabbi Akiva Omer nosen peah mikol echad ve'echad. Rabbi Akiva is of the view that when he goes back and harvests the second time, that is a separate harvest, and now each of the patches are separate from each other, and accordingly, each one requires a separate payah. The Chachamim Omri Me'echad ala kol. Chachamim are of the view that you just have to take payah from one of them on all of them, because the first harvesting is viewed as the beginning of the harvesting, and when he goes back and harvests the patches, that is viewed as part of the same harvesting, simply a continuation. So we only require, according to Chachamim, one payah. Umodim Chachamim l'Rabbi Akiva. Chachamim agree with Rabbi Akiva. Bezorea sheves or chaldal, if somebody plants dill or mustard seed, bishlosha mekomos, there are others that gores either two places or three places or more places, even if they are close together, but he plants them in patches, shunosen peah mikol echad ve'echad, that he gives a peah from each and every patch. And the reason is, and even if they're close together, that these types of vegetables, the dill and the mustard seed, they are typically planted separately from each other in these patches, and accordingly that is the common way that people would view these as separate fields from each other, and it would require separate payas for each patch. Mishnah Gimel brings other situations where somebody harvests his field in two stages. Hamachalik bitzalim. We're just going to define what that hamachalik means. The Bar Tanur brings two different explanations. One is from the language that Yaakov Avinu told about himself, that he can go to his father Yitzhak and to get the bracha. He says, "V'anochi ish chalak, I am a smooth person. My father will feel me." that I am smooth and not hairy like my dear brother. So it's from the Lashon Chalak. And why is that? Because when somebody takes bitzalim, onions, out of the ground no longer has a mound, but it flattens out. And he brings that there's another explanation that hamachlik is like mechalek, to divide. That we're talking about someone who is dividing his harvesting between onions that are lachim, that are still wet, in other words, very fresh right now, wet, and he brings them straight to the market for sale, and the other grouping he leaves to dry, and that he's going to pour it into storage for the future. So let's get back to the Mishnah now. Hamachalik bitzalim lachim lashuk. Somebody is dividing up his bitzalim. He's harvesting it in two stages. Initially, the moist ones he's sending out to market. Umekayim yaveshim lagoran, and he's keeping around others, and he will take them out of the ground. They will dry out, and he'll put them into storage. This is the situation that it's one species, but he's harvesting it at two times for two different purposes. No sen peah le'elu la'atzman u'le'elu la'atzman. He's going to have to get peah for each of those harvests separately. It's looked at as two separate harvests. He's going for two different purposes, and it's basically the same, where it's treated halachically the same as we saw in the prior parak in Mishnah Hay, where we had two different varieties of wheat that we had to take a peah on each of them. The same thing would apply here. We would look at this as two different varieties of onions. And the Mishnah continues, v'chein ba'afunim, the same would apply for chickpeas, v'chein b'karen, the same would apply for a grapevine, the same would apply for olives. If we do the same thing, that we harvest them, the moist ones, and send those out to the market, and then the rest we leave to dry and we put it into storage. That's viewed as two different harvests of two different varieties, and each one would be chayav a separate peah. Next situation is a little bit different. Hameidel, this means that somebody simply thins out his crops. He's got too much growing. It's not ripe yet, but he has to remove some of them in order to let room, to provide room for the rest to grow properly and ripen. So here you're just taking away some of the crops that's growing unripe. That's not a harvesting. Accordingly, nosen min hamishur al mashashir. You only have to give one payah for everything, and only what's left that you leave in the field to grow and to ripen, not what you remove. There's no payah requirement for what you remove before any ripening happened. And the last situation, we're going back to the hamachalik language, that you are dividing it, but ma'achas yad. So here what you're doing is you're harvesting, you have onions or other produce, and you're taking out the moist ones, and later on you're also taking out the dry ones, but it's for the same purpose. You're sending all of them to the market for sale, just in two different stages, or you're sending them all to storage, you're going to let it all dry out, you're just doing it in two different stages. So in this situation, this is considered one field, it's considered one continued harvesting. No semina mashur ala kol. You would give one peah on what's left in the field. So in other words, what you left in the field is the second crop, the second harvesting, but you're going to have to give an amount to cover all of the crop, even what you harvested at the beginning. So here the concept is, despite the fact that you harvested it in two lots, but because it's being used for the same purpose, it's considered one field, and you're simply going to have a chiyuv peah when you're finishing up the harvesting, because it's one continual harvesting, but you're going to have to give for the entire amount harvested from the field. Mishnah Dalet talks about when we have onions, and it's referred to in the Mishnah as ha'imao shel bitzalim, the mothers of onions, onion mothers. And what's going on here is, in order to create seeds for onions, to plant more seeds, to produce more onions, you would actually leave the onions in the ground for a significant amount of time. I saw somewhere that you typically leave it for 2 years, and then that's what generates the seeds that would be planted to generate the onions. So if we have the situation here, imal shel bitzalim, we have those imals, those mother onions that we're trying to create seeds with, we planted it. The Tana Kama says, chayavos bepeah, you're obligated to give peah even from those bitzalim. Now these are the type of onions that you would not want to eat because they don't taste very good. Nonetheless, as the Bartanur points out, you could eat them al yedeat chak in emergency situations. They were quasi-edible, but definitely not your first choice. But because it's edible, the Tana Kama says you have to give peah from it. And Rabbi Yossi Poter, Rabbi Yossi says, you don't have to give peah because it's not very edible. People would really not want to be eating these onions that are simply serving the purpose of staying in the ground in order to create additional seeds for onions. And continuing, when it comes to onions, mal benos habitzalim shebein ayarak, if we have a large onion patch, regular onions, and in between, we actually have them divided up into smaller patches in a larger field, and between the mal benos, literally the squares, the patches of the onions, we plant in the rows between them other vegetables. So do the other vegetables act as a mechitza, division between the various patches of the onions, such that it's considered two minim? When we have different minim, different species in a field, we have to give peah from each. So it divides up between each of the patches, and do we have to give peah from each onion patch? So Rabbi Yossi Omer, peah mikol echad ve'echad. Yes, Rabbi Yossi says you have to give the peah for each and every onion patch because we have vegetables planted in between them that act as a mechitza. Ve'chachamim omrim echad alakol. Chachamim are of the view that you just have to take one peah for the entire onion field. All the onion patches together would be aggregated because onions are the type of vegetable that can be stored easily. It's a more significant vegetable when it comes to the halachas of peah, but the vegetables in between the onions, they are not able to be stored, and accordingly, they would not be significant enough to separate between the onion patches. Mishnah Hay discusses when there are fields or even trees that are owned jointly by people, what are the halachas of peah? So the Mishnah starts out as follows. Ha'achim shechalku. So we have a situation that brothers, let's talk about two brothers, for example, they received a Yerusha. So as long as they haven't divided up the Yerusha, if they have a field, for example, they haven't divided it up between them, you have to leave one peah. However, once they've divided up that field between them, nostin shte peos. They would give two peos. Each one owns their field separately. It may be a half of what was originally, but that's irrelevant. Right now, they're separate fields, and each one has a separate obligation to give peah. Chazu v'nishtatfu. But if those brothers get together and repartner, they rejoin the field together as partners in it, nostin peah achas. Once again, they will only have to give one peah because that is a joint field. Shnaim shalachu es ha'ilan. If two people purchase a tree together, they are partners again, so it's joint ownership. Nosnim peachas, they only have to give one peah. However, lakach zetzvono v'zedromo, if they divide up the ownership in the tree, they're not partners in it. One owns the north side of the tree, and one owns the south side of the tree, for example. Zen nosen peah la'atzmo v'zen nosen peah la'atzmo. Each one would have a separate peah responsibility to leave over some of the fruits in the tree to fulfill the mitzvah peah. So because it's not jointly owned, it's separately owned, they each have a responsibility, the mitzvah, to do peah even in the same tree. Continuing, hamocher kilche ilan besoch sadeh. We have somebody who has a field and he sold off some tree saplings, and the intention is that the buyer is going to be relocating those tree saplings to wherever he desires. Now the seller here is selling the trees, including the roots of the trees, but not the ground there. So the halacha is as follows. No saint, it's talking about the purchaser. No saint, peah mikol echad ve'achad, has a responsibility to give peah from each and every tree because each tree is a separate sadeh. Each is being removed. There is no ground there that the purchaser owns that would join those trees together. So each is viewed as a separate property, and he has a responsibility to give peah from each and every tree sapling. It's assuming that there are fruits on each of those trees. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Emasai. Rabbi Yehuda comes to qualify this. Bizman shaloshir bal hasada. That's talking about that the buyer has the responsibility to give peah from each and every tree when the seller of those saplings, who retained ownership of the land, he did not retain any of the trees for himself. However, in the situation of al imshir bal hasada, if the owner of the field kept a tree, at least one tree, to himself, who knows, and peah lakol, he is responsible to give peah for everything that he sold off. And indeed, this is clarified in the Gemara. It's talking about a situation where the seller had begun to harvest the field before he sold off those trees. So in that situation, because once the seller began to harvest
immediately then the responsibility of Peah kicks in. And that responsibility of Peah is retained by the field as a whole, even though he sells off tree saplings to others, but he still retains with his field the responsibility of Peah to do Peah for everything that was in the field at the time that he began to harvest. So that's the reason if he maintained any ownership of trees in the land, he didn't sell them all off, then indeed the seller would maintain the responsibility for Peah, including on everything that he sold off.
Mishnah Vav lists out a number of opinions as to the minimum size of a field that someone could have in order to obligate him in the mitzvah of Peah. We're actually going to go in descending size of field, starting with the shita that holds you need the largest size and going down to the smallest size. So Mishnah Vav says as follows, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer was of the view, karka beis rova chayeves bepeah, only if you have a karka, a piece of real estate that you can plant a fourth of a kav of seed on it. That's approximately 104 square meters. That would be the minimum size to be obligated in Peah. But smaller than that, according to Rabbi Eliezer, there would be no chiyuv of Peah. Opinion number two, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Haose Sa'asayim. Rabbi Yeshua doesn't look at the size of the field, but what it can yield. If a field produces two seah of seed, then it's obligated in Peah. But if it yields less than that, then it's not chayev in Peah. Just all of the opinions we're about to cite, and we cited just now, they have limudim, but we won't go into them. Number three, Rabbi Tarfon Omer Shishal Shishatfachim. Rabbi Tarfon was of the view that the minimum size of a field to be chayev Peah is six tefach by six tefach. Number four, Rabbi Yehuda ben Meseiro Omer, Kedei Liksor V'lishnos. His view is that it has to be big enough that it can grow a fistful of produce, of grain. In other words, that you could take that and reap it and then do it again. So a total of two fistfuls of grain that you would be reaping. So that's Rabbi Yehuda ben Meseiro Omer, Kedei Liksor, to reap V'lishnos, and to do it again. Bahalacha Kedvar of the Mishnah Paskins, that is how we paskin. In fact, we don't paskin that way. We paskin like the fifth Shita, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Karkosh Kolshu Chayevis Bepeah, even the smallest amount, even if you can only grow one stalk of grain on it, that is going to be chayav peah. So any amount, as long as you can grow something on it, is going to have a chayav peah. And not only does this halacha, according to Rabbi Akiva, that just a minuscule amount of land applied to applies the mitzvah peah, but also the mitzvah bikurim. Bikurim are the first fruits of the sheva minim that Eretz Yisrael is praised in, that they're brought to the Beis Hamikdash. Even if you have just a tiny amount of land, the farmer would still be obligated to bring bikurim from that. And in addition, another halacha that it applies to, v'lichtov aleha pruzbol, to write on it a pruzbol. A pruzbol is that famous document that Hillel instituted out of concern that people coming up to the Shemitah year, the Shemitah would, al pi din d'oraisa, cancel any loans that were outstanding at that time. But the concern was that lenders will stop lending in concern that they won't be ever paid back from the borrower, because the Shemitah come is going to destroy, is going to cancel the loan. Coming close to the Shemitah, who wants to give a loan? So Hillel instituted that the lender would write a document and hand it over the court. So now it was in the court's hand to enforce effectively the repayment of the loan. But how it worked exactly is that the borrower, it only worked if the borrower actually owns land. And the mechanism was as such that if the court effectively holds the land as a mortgage, as collateral for the loan before Shemitah happens, that's what enables the collecting of the loan even after Shemitah. So that requires the borrower to own some loan. So Rabbi Akiva is telling us, even if the borrower owns even the smallest amount of property, the licht of Allah approvable, you could write on it approvable. That would be sufficient. And the last halacha that we're being taught, that it applies even a tiny amount of land, there are different ways that somebody would be kone. This is talked about in Masachet Kiddushin, that would be kone real property versus movable property. And real property is called nechasim sheyesh lam achrayus. It has responsibility. Literally, it has responsibility because somebody, in fact, could collect
on property when it's sold to a third party if it has a lien on it. So that's why it's called, it has achrayus. I can go after it. It's responsible to me, but as opposed to movable property. So there are different ways to acquire real estate as opposed to movable property. Real estate is acquired by kesef, shtar, and chazaka, by paying money, by the seller giving a shtar, a document, or the purchaser evidencing ownership on it by an act of chazaka on the field. However, movable property is not sold with kesef, shtar, and chazaka. The main way to sell movable property is by a kinyan hagbah. There are other ways also. You could do meshicha. The Masechet Kiddushin gets into the details of it. But what we're learning here is that when you are buying land as well as movable property, if you do the kinyan on the land itself through kesef, shtar, and chazaka, which is effective for land and not movable property, but if you acquire them at the same time, we can apply those same methods of kinyanim, kesef, shtar, and chazaka, not only to the land, but to the movable property as well, via what's called a kinyan agav, that as long as I'm acquiring the land through this one of these kinyanim, I can also acquire the movable property at the same time along with the land through one of these kinyanim that would otherwise not work if I were just acquiring movable property. So the Mishnah concludes here, just to read the language in the Mishnah, which we just explained, viliknos ima, as long as you have a tiny amount of land, viliknos ima, we could buy with it, nechasim she'em lehem achrayus, even movable property, because we're buying a real estate, bekesef v'shtar b'chazaka, and because kesef v'shtar b'chazaka works on the real estate, even a tiny amount, it will work as well on the nechasim she'em lehem achrayus, on the movable property. Mishnah Zayin gives us two more examples of when even having the tiniest amount of property would be sufficient for something. The Reisha talks about when we have a Shechiv Meira, somebody who is seriously ill, and gives away his property all in part, and then he gets better and reclaims that property, saying, the whole basis for my giving away that property was that I thought I would pass away. Now that I got better, I can have my property back because I gave it on that misimpression, based on that false condition, and accordingly give me my property back. So the Mishnah distinguishes the situations. Hakosev nechasev shchimera. Somebody who's a shchimera, seriously ill, he writes the way that I'm giving away my property. So it depends when he has a refuah shalema, can he get it back or not? Shir karkash kolshu. If he maintained when he gave away the gift even the smallest amount of property for himself, and then he got better, we see that he didn't have the full expectation of passing away, because if he really thought he would be passing away, he wouldn't have kept anything for himself. Accordingly, that wasn't the basis for giving away his gift, and now that he's reclaiming it, he cannot get it back. Matana so matana, the gift is a gift, and he cannot get it back. However, lo shir karka kolshu, if he did not keep anything for himself, and then he got better, Ein matana so matana, the gift that he gave is not a valid gift, because we see that he gave it all away. He really was giving it because he thought he would pass away. Now that he didn't pass away, effectively it was a condition of his giving the gift that he would pass away. When he doesn't pass away, he can reclaim that gift. Baruch Hashem yeter for shalema. The next example of when we need at least a tiny bit of property for something to be effective is as follows. Hakosev nechasov libanov, somebody who writes that he's giving away his property as a gift to his children. It's a machlokas in the Meforshim if this is also talking about a shchiv meira or not. According to the Bartanura, it is talking about a shchiv meira, and he's giving away in advance. He's about to pass away. I'm giving away all my property. Vekasev liishto karka kolshu, and in the gifts that he's giving in advance of his passing away, because it's imminent, he includes not only his children, but he gives something to his wife as well. And what he gave her was less than the amount that she would receive on her ksuba. So her ksuba example would be she's supposed to get 200 zuz on her ksuba, and he's now dividing up the property, including to his wife, and he gives her 50 zuz instead of the 200 zuz she would have received on her ksuba had he passed away before giving this gift. Ibda ksuba, so because she remained silent and she accepted that gift along with all the others who are receiving the gift, along with the children, she has now forgiven her ability to get paid her ksuba. So this is in place of her ksuba because she was silent. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi goes even a step further. And we don't paskin like Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yossi says, im kibla leha, even if there wasn't a designated gift for her, but she simply accepted upon it herself. She accepted, okay, I'm going to receive a portion of the estate along with the other sons of my husband in that situation. Im kibla leha, she assumed I'm going to get something. She accepted I'm going to get something. Af al pi shelo, even though the husband who's the Shchiv Meira, her husband who's the father of the other children also who are about to get the Yerusha, even though he didn't write her something in specific because she was amenable to taking a Yerusha or the gift in advance of his passing away with the other children who would be Yoresh along with her, Ibda Ksuba. So here also she is losing her Ksuba because she was amenable to replacing it. However, we don't pass King like Rabbi Yossi on this one. Mishnah Ches gives us one last example of even when a small amount of property, real property, movable property would be sufficient. And the scenario is such, typically when somebody owns a non-Jewish slave, if that non-Jewish slave acquires something from a third party, or even if the master gives him something, that non-Jewish slave doesn't own it. Masha, kana, evit, kana, rabba, whatever the slave owns, the master owns as well. However, we have an exception to the rule that if the master hands over all of the master's assets to that evid is now owning everything, including himself. And the result of that is that the master is setting that Eved free. So the Mishnah says as follows, Akosev Nechasev La'avdo, if somebody writes over all of his assets to his non-Jewish slave, Yatza ben Chorim, that sets the non-Jewish slave free because the master is handed over also ownership of the Eved himself. However, Shir Karka Kolshu, the Tanakhama says, if the owner, rather than giving all of his assets over to the slave, maintain ownership in an asset, a specific asset, he says, I'm going to give you everything except my field, except my horse. Lo yatza ben chorim. In that situation, the evid is not going to go free because we assume that, as we see, the master is keeping an asset to himself. He would have retained the asset of the slave as well. And in fact, in this situation, when the evid does not go free because the owner has excluded some asset for himself to keep for himself, the Eved would not own anything because of Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabo. As long as that Eved is still owned by the master, any gift given by the master would revert right back to the master. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that. He disagrees with the premise that if the master excludes a certain asset, that we're going to include the Eved in that as well. That, he says, doesn't work. It would have to be that what the master excludes in giving of the gift to the Eved has to be unspecified. In other words, if what's excluded isn't a specific asset, but it's a vague thing that we can argue that it's referring to the Eved itself that the master is maintaining ownership of, in that situation, the Eved would not go free. What does that mean? So here we go. We'll look at the language of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lo'olam u'ben chorin, whenever the master gives all of his assets or even some of the assets and retain specific assets to himself, that Eved is going to go free because the master didn't specifically retain ownership to that Eved. Ad Shiyomar, unless the owner would say in the gift, Hare Kol Nechasai Nisunim Le'ish Ploni Avdi, I'm giving all of my assets over to this Eved, Chutz Mi'echad Miribuloy Shebem, with the exception of 1/10,000th of my assets. In other words, he's not specifying what that asset is. Even if it's a tiny asset, as that's the example of what we're talking about in the Mishnah, based on the prior Mishnah, all things that even a tiny asset would be sufficient, as long as the master doesn't specify what that asset is that he's excluding from the gift, we can read into that, that that is referring to the slave himself that the master is maintaining ownership of. And accordingly, even now, Rabbi Shimon would agree that the Eved does not go free. And he also, as long as he doesn't go free, he does not receive the gift because the gift of the other assets revert directly to the owner, Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabo.